I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of the Tennis.com podcast. I'm your host, Nina Pantic. This episode features Maria Sakkari. She is ranked number 22 in the world. Irina Falcone, my co-host, and I are going to break down this interview that I had with Maria a couple weeks ago. She's had quite a year in this abbreviated season, reaching the fourth round of the U.S. Open, the quarterfinals in Cincy, the third round of the French Open, and then the semifinals in Ostrava to wrap up her season. And she's someone that puts a lot of pressure on herself going into each tournament expecting to win. So let's jump into the interview I had with Maria Sakkari.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
Thank you for your time, first of all.
No worries.
So obviously the French Open had been different than New York, but everyone's talked so much about the conditions this year. Is it that different than the French Open you played last year in the spring?
Yeah, of course. I mean, even though in springtime you can have some cold days and rainy days here in Paris, of course, you know, my first round match was, I think, the coldest day and we played in the rain. So think like the ball just turned brown. You couldn't see any yellow from the ball. To be honest, you know, it's just you have to accept it, embrace it, and just be grateful that you have the opportunity to play another Grand Slam, even though it's, you know, under these conditions.
You've made the fourth round of a Grand Slam twice. In the French Open, you made the third round. What kind of expectations do you put on yourself going into a major?
Well, I think that's what makes me, you know, a good player, that I have expectations for myself. I'm coming here with the mindset of winning the tournament. Of course, it's a long way to go, but I'm not coming here to win two matches and be like, okay, I made third round. No, that's not my mentality. And I know that I can do it. And, you know, I've shown some great tennis this year, especially great mentality as well. And I think that I don't see why not going deep here or in the next major.
How do you unwind and stay entertained in all of these different bubbles?
When you're in a tournament, especially in a slam, stress level is like up to here. So let's say in Australia that we were not in a bubble. I had room service most of the nights because I just wanted to be as relaxed as I could. So it's not a big difference. It's just the fact that you cannot go out. That's what makes most of the players, you know, feeling a little bit trapped. But to be honest, I have a great team that makes it so much better. You know, we're having a lot of fun with Tom and Daniel. So, you know, good food, good company on the phone, my friends back home. I cannot complain. I've seen nothing, you know, negative from my side. So I kind of like it. I think I'm going to be sad once this bubble thing is over because I feel less stressed, I have to say.
Wow, that's a good perspective to have. And you mentioned your team, so Tom Hill, and then who's Daniel?
Daniel's my physio, and Tom is, of course, my coach.
Is it fun working with a team that's so young?
So we're all 25 years old, me, Tom, and Daniel, which makes it so fun, you know. But, of course, working with Tom, it's so easy. I mean, you have nothing to worry about. He takes care of most of the things before I even tell him. He's so relaxed. I have nothing to complain about. And I just enjoy every time, you know, I'm on the court with him. So It's great to have the, you know, these people around when they're not like a family member, you know.
What was the quarantine experience like for you? I know you're Greek, but you're based in Monte Carlo. So what was the quarantine like?
I was in Greece because I just wanted to be, you know, with my family at that time. And my brother and my sister came back also. So we spent the whole time together, which was amazing. You know, I got to train a lot in my fitness and stuff because that was the only thing I could do outdoors. And just started playing tennis after 5 weeks since I came back from Indian Wells. It was nice, I have to say. I enjoyed home.
Your mom, Angeliki, was a top 40 WTA pro. I feel like no one really talks about that so much. So what is that like? Has she influenced your career a lot?
Yeah, of course. I mean, she's more a mom now, which, you know, it's nice, but she always has some, you know, things like good things to say. And, I forgot the word now.
Like advice?
Like advices. Yeah. Advices. So, you know, she has been here. Actually she stopped when she was 25. So it's, imagine like me stopping now. There's no, absolutely no chance. But, you know, it's great to have someone that really knows what you're going through. She's a great supporter.
Does she still hit? Does she play with you ever?
Oh, that's so, that's a thing that, you know, I'm actually complaining about to her because I'm like, she works out a lot in the gym, like every day with her personal trainer, but she doesn't play. I think I'm going to convince her to, you know, just start hitting again.
Does she watch all of your matches and have comments for you afterward?
Oh, yeah. And she's more stressed than any other parent. And that makes it even, you know, more weird because she has been in my position. So I think she really knows when I'm stressed. So she's even more stressed. But funny enough, like when she's back home, let's say she's watching my match, she has this game on her phone. It's called Candy Crush. I think you might know it. She's watching my match and playing that game just to make her more relaxed.
That is so relatable, though. Did she ever hands-on coach you when you were little?
She helped me out a few times when I didn't have a coach. But when I was little, I was practicing with my grandfather because he was my mom's coach up until I was 12 or 13. And then I just, you know, worked with some other people. But my mom was there with me when she called herself the emergency coach. So when I was without a coach, she was, you know, stepping in.
So does she ever have advice that's annoying for you, or is it always really helpful?
It's one thing that annoys me a lot is like, make first serves. And I'm like, okay, mom, thank you very much. I know that I have to make first serves. It's like, just put it in, just, you know, kick it. I'm like, come on, mom, I'm not playing under 12. I'm competing with players. I have to hit the serve. And she's like, no, convinced I have to put more first serves. I'm like, that's our disagreement.
So when you were little, did you know right away you wanted to turn pro because she already kind of had done this path before you, or was it harder for you as a junior?
Well, I was good, but I was not that good, you know. I mean, if you check my juniors ranking, I was like 230, my highest. I think I'm one of the few players that have made it here without being a good junior. So it's not like I was, you know, super good, or I'm like, I'm going to make it for sure. I told my mom when I was 18, I'm just going to make a try going to Spain and just train there and see if when I'm 22, haven't made, you know, made it or feeling that I can make it, I will just do something else. And, you know,
22, that's a good amount.
Yeah.
What else would you do?
Well, trust me, my mind never stops thinking. I have a lot of things that I want to do in my life. I'm thinking of a lot of things that I can do outside of tennis, of course, and or including tennis. And, you know, I feel like I'm capable of doing other stuff, which makes me also quite happy about it. And I'm not just tennis. So I think I would find something fun to do.
My last question, you know, do you realize how different your game is compared to other players? The heavy spin, the big serve, you know, you have such an aggressive, powerful, physical game. How big of an advantage is that, especially on clay?
The good thing about my game is that, you know, when once I step on a different surface, I can, you know, do some adjustments. Let's say here, of course, I use more my forehand. Maybe on the hard court, I use more, you know, I don't like run around so much. But the thing that has improved a lot in my game is my serve, because we worked a lot, that it's giving me, you know, like a good, how can I say it? I'm more relaxed when I play, when I know that I can serve it out, or when I know that I can rely on my serve a little bit more than before. But of course, my main thing is my physicality. Then, you know, I feel like I can stay on court forever, which is good.
Oh my gosh. Okay, well, best of luck. Thank you so much for your time.
Thanks a lot. See ya. Bye.
All right, everyone, we just heard from Maria Sakkari. Irina, what's your initial take on Maria, and have you ever played her? I'm not sure that you have, but you've seen her play, obviously.
I have seen her play, and she is by far one of the most physical players I think I've ever seen on court. I'm sure that if you've seen Maria Sakkari, the first thing you think of is, wow, she's jacked. I've had people from all over kind of tell me, like, oh my gosh, I saw this girl. She's so jacked. I was like, yep. She was on TV. Yep, that's Maria Sakkari. Has to be. She stands out as one of the most jacked players on tour. And you can tell from her game that she works so hard to be physical. And that's how she wins so many matches.
I also love her personality. She's really nice. And that's something that even though we're doing interviews now through Zoom and Microsoft Teams and all that, you can still see her like smile. And I really like her personality. And I also like her coach, Tom Hill, who I've met because he used to be an intern at Tennis Channel. And that just makes me so happy. He worked with Danielle Collins, and then he moved on to work with Maria. They've been going on for 2 years now. He's super young. He's 25, the same age as Maria. So my first topic of debate here, what do you think about having a coach that young, your age, maybe even younger? What's your thought?
To be honest, I have gotten to the point where if it works, it works. I mean, he was 23 when they met. Clearly something is working for them because she's done exceptionally well with him. I know that she was working with an older coach before Tom. So obviously, like, she's a very good player. And yeah, you can tell that she gets along with him. And sometimes it's actually better to have someone that knows the current game, because if you have people that come in and they're a coach that is from an old school era, if you will, they kind of have these instilled ways of thinking that they don't really want to change, as I'm sure you've seen. And so having someone that's fresh, young eyes can sometimes be very refreshing.
I do see how younger coaches are super eager. They're eager to learn, eager to watch, eager to take notes, while older coaches might not be as flexible with their time, maybe more set in their ways of, you know, relaxing and unwinding and doing things that they prefer to do than watch tennis all day. But I think having too young of a coach can be a big problem. Things can get awkward, especially when it's a guy and a girl. Maybe I'm a little old fashioned here, but I think there could be some like weird tension and weird problems when someone is your age and then listening to them, especially if you're having a bad swing, a bad match, a bad practice. You've seen all those mid-match player coach moments. Like, it can get really awkward. And I think an older person would be have an easier time disciplining and, you know, telling the player what to do and how to do it without any pushback. Pros and cons to both, but I don't know. When I was playing, like, I think my coach was 15 years older, and then obviously college a lot older. And I mean, I know you've worked with all kinds of people, but like when we were kids, I don't know, the coaches were always, to me, like, they seem so old. Looking back, they're probably like 27 when we were teenagers.
Yeah. I mean, it's so interesting because, like you said, they're just so instilled in their ways. I remember one coach that I was working with in particular, and I told him that I'm the kind of player that really, really likes it when a coach is involved and eye contact, and like, I want to know that you're there with me. And he looked at me, he was just like, do you really think that so-and-so would tell Yvonne Lendl this? Like, I'm not going to do that. And I was just like, okay, that, I mean, what do you say to that? And so it's just so strange because tennis is one of the only sports where you're the boss, but you also have a coach that you want him to be the boss, but he can't be too much of the boss because you're still the one that's playing out there. Yeah, so it's a very interesting and unique dynamic.
I like what you said in the beginning, though. You said whatever works, works. I mean, chemistry is a huge part. I think we're talking about women more here than men. You see the coaches switching. The coaching carousel is so constant because sometimes things just don't click. So it doesn't even matter how old you are. I just think, you know, the way that Maria explains it, they seem like they're all like a good little troop of friends, which is super fun, especially this year when things have been so crazy. I could see how younger coaches and younger physiotherapists and younger players can kind of adapt. And then she also, on another similar point, is having your parent as a coach. Initially, her mom, Angeliki, was a former top 50 player. People don't talk about this enough. That's so crazy. And she didn't really coach her that much, but her grandfather coached her mom and coached her. What do you think about having a parent or any family member coaching you?
Yeah, that's a, I think that's a debate that we could go on for hours and hours. I mean, you hear horror stories of parents that are just absolutely insane and that just constantly push their children. And you have other stories where parents kind of let off a little bit and the child blooms. I mean, I can think of so many right off the top of my head. You have Wozniacki, you had Hingis, you had Serena. I mean, there's so many players that have had success with having a parent. And then you have other situations like you and me, for example, where we were coached by our dads for the longest, longest time, but them actually letting go and being like, all right, now I have to actually give it to a professional because both of our parents didn't really know how to get to that next level. I mean, I think there's a lot of, there's just so many dynamics to it because you also have to have that,
like a balance.
You'd want to make sure that you don't lose being a father. You want to make sure that you continue being a father and it's not just a tennis coach. And I think it takes a very, very mature parent and a parent that understands the cons of what can happen if you do coach your child. And as we saw recently, Serena put Olympia and she's taking tennis lessons and she was like, I'm gonna walk away, you know, I'm not gonna be that like overbearing parent, and we'll see how long if it's actually true. But
I mean, when I look at the top 10 men's and women's, for me Stefano Tsitsipas stands out because his dad is always in his box, and Sofia Kenin because her dad is always in her box and by her side. It kind of seems like it's working for both of them. Obviously they're top 10 and they're young, but when someone's like 25, 28, 30, and their mommy or daddy is in the box, like, you know, freaking out, I don't know if I'm that comfortable with that. I think at some point you got to let it go. But what I also find interesting is that most of the player parent combinations, the parent was not a former pro. Like Taylor Fritz's mom doesn't coach him. Maria Sakkari's mom doesn't coach her. But then we have all these other people who are like recreational, like our parents or our dads were, and they're the ones that are trying to coach. So I think it's not as much coaching as it is guiding. And that relationship has been built for so long that the player wants the parent to be there, almost like a manager more than a coach. That's the vibe I get.
I always tell this to people. I'm like, half the battle of finding a coach per se, it's not necessarily finding someone that knows tennis. It's just having someone in your corner. And I know you have someone like Wozniacki who's just had her parents there all like this whole time, like doesn't matter what, but they're always there. And she's, it's a support team, like you said. And you have Serena with her mom and her sisters. And there's just so many things that can come confidence wise if you know that your parents and your family is there. And may not work for other players. So it just depends on the personality and who you are.
I mean, for a while though, you traveled with your fiance, Travis Hartman. So like he wasn't a coach in any capacity. He's more of a fitness trainer, but he was your main person on the road day in and day out, right?
Yeah. And at one point I won my biggest title and it was in Colombia. It was a WTA title where they allowed on-court coaching and he didn't come on court one time because he's like, what am I going to say to you? Like, what am I going to say? And so just having someone there, I tell this to everyone, especially girls that are on the ITF tour, that they can't really afford coaches that are good coaches because the good coaches are with the top 100, top 50 players. So it's a catch 22 because they don't really have the money to spend on the coach. But then if you don't want to spend that much money, you're going to get someone that's probably not as highly qualified. So I always tell people, I'm like, if you don't have a coach that you can travel with, just have someone that you just trust, like with absolutely everything, that's just going to be in your corner no matter what.
I agree. I've seen combinations where like friends will come on court for on-court coaching or and girlfriend or boyfriend will come on. I mean, I think it's all about whatever works in certain situations and each person is different. We don't know what's going on with Stefanos and his dad all the time. Obviously, we can only judge from what we see. So it is what it is. And I think
each case is different. But another topic that stands out to me from my chat with Maria, obviously I caught up with her a few weeks ago and she'd end up losing in the third round of the French Open. She felt going in, she's going in with the intent to win the tournament, not just to make the third round. And in looking back, I'm like, yeah, of course you could have won. Anyone could have won that tournament, like literally anyone. So what was your mentality going into tournaments? Is going in with the intent to win the whole thing the right way to do it?
100%. When she said that, I was like, yeah, why else do you go to a tournament? You don't just go there and be like, oh, I hope I win a few matches. And I still remember clear as day. I was in college. It was at Georgia Tech. And it was, I think, a few months in, and I still didn't really know my teammates very much. And we were going to a tournament, and I was like, so are you ready to like win this upcoming tournament? And we were all like playing in them. And I just told that to one of my teammates. She's like, oh, I just hope I can win a round or two. And I was like, what? Like, who actually goes with the intention to just win a round or two? It's like, no, you want to win. That's what you're there for. That's what you want to compete for, is for the title. So when she said that, I was like, yep, that's where she's at. And that's why she's been doing so well. Because with the right mentality, I mean, I understand where it can be a little bit of a pressure, but at the same time, you just have to go out there with, I'm going to win this match.
I think I see it a lot more in higher ranked players. As you said, Maria's top 20. So the mentality makes sense for someone that level. I do see sometimes younger players or newer players just going in, trying to gain experience, trying to grow, hoping to make second week, hoping to beat so-and-so opponent. And it's a bit more small-minded. I think when you get so much ranked, so much higher, you start to think big. And I like that she's thinking big. I think she's definitely a threat for Grand Slams. Still, someone that I really enjoyed chatting with and touched on some really good points, particularly young coaches, parents as coaching, and going in to win. So I hope that everyone got something out of this. And Irina, thank you. And thanks everyone for listening.
Thanks, guys.
From the Tennis Channel Podcast Network, this has been the Tennis.com Podcast. Be sure to subscribe to stay caught up. We're available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and every major listening app, as well as tennis.com/podcasts. You can also see the videos of our episodes on Tennis Channel's YouTube page and tennis.com's Facebook page. We're your hosts, Nina Pantic and Irina Falcone. We'd like to thank our team, editor and audio designer and video editor Christina Koseva, producers Alexa March and Sean O'Malley, and executive producers Shelby Coleman, Kyle Einhorn, and Andy Chu.